One, two, three, four.
Oh, yeah, more cowbell, Bill.
We need more cowbell. That's the way the show should start.
Yeah.
I'm Bill. That's Wendy.
Hi,
you're
everyone.
The audience. Thanks for being here, you guys. Give yourselves a round of applause. Handsome group of folks.
Always.
A handsome group of people.
We are broadcasting live from Saturday Night Live, The Experience, at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits. Oh, boy.
So good. Oh, don't eat the key lime pie. It's awful. And I say that selfishly because
yes.
It's really, really good.
Let's
and the less you
more.
Eat, the more for me. So do not eat the key lime pie. It's tainted.
Sorry, Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits. Now I'm embarrassed.
I only taste one bang in the key lime. They left the bang out.
We got here early today, and I need to pat myself on the back. I was the first one here.
For the first time in history.
Ever. Ever.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a lot for me. I usually roll in around showtime at 10.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to tour the exhibit before mm-hmm. we got on the air because we wanted to say how great it was, and it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I parked my car. I walked here, Bill.
All in one day.
And I beat you here.
How about that?
It's never happened before.
I lost $100. I lost a lot
Darn
of money
it,
on this.
I should have taken that bet. However, we were here, and Justin ran us through this. This is, has anyone toured this before? A couple. All right. Two, three
a couple,
people.
A couple, yeah.
Four people. You are in for a huge treat today. We just ran through it. I've been dying to see Saturday Night Live, The Experience. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. If their goal was to make you feel like you were at 30 Rock in New York, really there on game night when they were shooting it, they've succeeded. Every inch of it feels like you're there. It's fantastic.
My favorite part of the tour was, as Justin was giving it to us, you were correcting him about everything at the museum and in the exhibit.
Right. That's my job.
Why do you do that?
It's more enjoyable for me.
But it yeah. turns out you're wrong about something.
About a couple of things.
All right.
Turns out it is in New York. I thought they shot it in Australia, but they shoot it in New York. I was wrong. I apologize for that. But everything you see, it brings back so many memories. You and I have talked about this before, Wendy. We were there on that first night, not physically there, but watching it on television, October of 1975. When everything changed, the world of comedy just changed, didn't it?
Yeah, and I kind of learned something today, but I don't want to reveal it because I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't toured the exhibit.
Okay.
But the very beginning of SNL had to do with one particular individual.
Yeah, maybe don't spoil it.
No,
yet.
I'm not.
Yeah.
But I
somebody
just,
that you wouldn't expect
yes.
was instrumental in Saturday Night Live's creation. You find out on the tour who it was, and it is it's a surprise. It's Jory Luloff. There, I ruined the surprise. Sorry, everybody, but it's Jory Luloff.
She
it was
just
her. Yeah.
So happy that you keep her name alive.
It's my favorite thing to do. I will never forget, on that night in 1975, I'm 12 years old, and my brother and I are in our living room, and we normally watch whatever was on TV. I hadn't heard anything about Saturday Night Live until it was on that first night. There was no advance promo. If there was, I sure didn't see it. But it was on, and that first scene happened, and my brother and I just looked at each other, and we went, what is this? You know, we'd never seen anything like it before. Comparisons have been made to Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, which, by the way, Lorne Michaels was a writer on for years.
You know? I loved, but it was the ADD version of
yes,
SNL.
Yes, it was.
It was the same, yet very different.
Right. An ADD virgin was a girl that you knew in high school. This was different, Wendy, because all of a sudden, the rules of comedy were tilted in a way we weren't used to. On Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, it was a guy in a German helmet riding a tricycle tipping over, and that was the punchline.
Right.
But this, it had so much more depth to it. It was just amazing, the difference.
Now, did you watch SNL with your mom and dad?
Sometimes, yeah. Not
that
always,
first
but sometimes.
Episode I'm talking.
No, that first one was my brother and myself.
Because I don't know why, but we only had one TV in the house, and it was my mom, and my sister is a little older than me. A lot older.
Yeah.
And so we watched it, and I just remember the same thing. We all looked at each other like,
what is this? Yeah. It was so different from everything. And also at the time, Hee Haw was on.
Loved that. So, oh, my God. Where, oh, where are you tonight? Why did you leave me here all alone?
I keep waiting for people to leave, but nobody's left.
The world over, thought I found true love. You met another and...
Oh, see, come on, don't encourage her. What are you doing?
Gone. Thank you very much.
People in the audience are encouraging you.
The Hee-Haw exhibit will be coming next year, and I will be your tour guide. Thank you very much.
Is that the song you sang when you were musical guest on Saturday Night Live? Was that the song you chose?
Yeah, but who are we talking to that we were all, Ryan Burrow, back at the station yesterday and on the air. I mean, a round of applause. Who kind of imagined themselves being on the stage of SNL saying, we got a great show, our musical guest is.
Yeah.
Come on, clap if you ever thought that.
A lot of people, right?
Sure. It was the coolest place to be was on that stage.
Yeah. Last year, you know this already, but my family and I were in New York, and we went to a taping of Saturday Night Live, a showing, a screening of Saturday Night Live, and we were on that stage when the show was over. Colin Jost was nice enough to let us go up on the stage, and we took pictures and stuff. And to think about all the famous people who had been in the exact same spot, you know, addressing the audience and telling them, we've got a great show coming up for you tonight, it brought goosebumps to me. It was like, a lot of people, when they see the Liberty Bell, they have that feeling. I would just go, oh, it's cracked. You got to fix this. This is embarrassing. But to be on that stage where everyone famous of all time had stood and talked about the show, it was amazing.
Did you correct anyone for the information?
Yeah, a couple of people. Yes, I did.
It's very fun to watch Bill do that.
Thank you very much.
It really is.
Thanks, Wendy. All right, we must take a break, everybody. You sat through Wendy's song, so sit through the rest of the show. I think you'll enjoy it. A big show for you. Oh, Alan Zweibel, one of the original writers of Saturday Night Live, will not be with us live in person, but over the phone. We've talked to Alan in the past. Has great stories about the early days of SNL. Rich Coes, a.k.a. Svengoolie, will be here. We'll find out about the inner workings of the exhibit that you're going to see today. All that and more coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You ready for cheeseburger?
Look! Cheeseburger.
Did you
see the sign? Yeah. The cheeseburger sign?
Very impressive. Listen to the crowd!
That's because they're all thinking about going to Billy Goat after this.
Listen to them! 1,500 very nice people came out today, Wendy. 1,500 very nice folks being fed by Bang Bang Pies. We're at the Museum of Broadcast Communications on State Street.
Yes, we are. And thank you to Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits. Visit their bakeries in Logan Square or Ravenswood for sweet and savory pies, biscuits, coffee, and more.
Here's a tough question for you. What is the hardest something on Saturday Night Live made you laugh? Do you remember a moment where you saw something that just made you laugh so hard you couldn't breathe anymore?
You know,
that's tough, isn't it?
Seeing some of the costumes as you go through this exhibit, I laughed really hard at some of them. Again, I don't want to give away a lot of stuff.
For people who have not experienced it yet? Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, there are outfits and costumes that you'll see, and I'm not ruining anything. The Killer Bees, all right?
The Killer Bees,
funny.
Yeah?
Samurai stuff was very funny. I really loved John Belushi. I liked the goofy commercials that they made.
Yeah.
There's a part of the exhibit dedicated to that. I can't think of, like...
It's hard, isn't it?
I laugh a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
What, you have a particular...
All right, for me, and this is sick, but do you remember a scene where it was Massive Head Wound Harry?
Yes, I do.
Does anyone remember that episode? It was a one-time thing. It wasn't a reoccurring character, but Dana Carvey attended a party, and he had just, for reasons I don't remember, suffered a horrible head wound, and the makeup department made it as such so you could see his brain
and
parts of his head. I don't know what it was about it. It was just the audacity of having that guy at a party made me laugh very hard.
How old were you then? Were you still a kid? Are you still a kid?
Yeah.
Have you reached puberty?
No, it's the same. The answer is the same on every one of those.
But didn't you, there's a lovely intro video that that I really enjoyed, and you learn a lot. Didn't you find yourself, like, kind of being nudged, going, oh, yeah, that happened. Oh, I had forgotten about that.
Right.
There are so many momentous occasions that happened throughout the years of Saturday Night Live.
I don't think there's been a show in history, I don't think, that's had as many of those moments where to some extent it changed culture, it changed our sense of humor, it changed, you know, there's so many famous catchphrases, and I don't want to give any out because later on, I hope you guys will stick around for this, we're going to play a special edition of Jeopardy where some of you will get to be the contestants at Saturday Night Live Jeopardy, so please stick around for that. So when I was writing the questions for that, honestly, there's 30 questions, but I had 100 of them ready. I mean, everything led to something else. I'm like, oh, I can't say that without mentioning this or bringing up that character or that actress. There was just too much, you know?
And I have to tell you, I love rock and roll. Thank you, Joan Jett, for inventing that term. The musical guests that have been featured on Saturday Night Live over the years are amazing. Just watching that montage before we started.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And then now I feel old because there are a lot of times I don't even know who that is, and I wouldn't know who that was unless it was for Saturday Night Live.
Right,
it's
right.
Hippifying me, Bill.
Yeah, I know.
Grandma's getting hip. No,
new,
I actually
Grandma's got a
knee.
New hip.
No.
that should be a phrase to face. I can't. Can you think of a single important band or singer in the last 40 years that has not appeared on Saturday Night Live? There's no names that come to mind.
If the they Beatles.
Well, yes and no. I mean, they
not the
kind
Beatles
of
as
not
a whole.
The Beatles. No, the four of them never.
I win.
They never
I
did.
I was here first, and I win.
You Although you remember me. When it was offered, Lorne Michaels offered them. What do you say? $500 if they'd come on the show, and he also said they could give Ringo less money. That's hysterical.
Poor Ringo.
And you know, the backstory of that is Paul McCartney says that he and John Lennon were together watching it, and they thought it'd be funny once they saw the pretend offer to just, you know, take a cab over to Saturday Night Live and be on the show, but they didn't do it.
God, that would have killed.
It would have been hysterical, right? Yeah, yeah. So, you know, please, later on, stick around as long as you can. Toward the end of the show, we'll play a special edition of Jeopardy. We can't use the set. We've been told we can't use the set, but we'll do it here, and some of you who are in the audience will be the contestants. And we got some pretty good prizes, so please stick around for that.
We do, and a round of applause for Bill Leff, who put together this game. I'm telling you,
easy.
Every time he hosts a game...
Thank you, it's easy.
I mean, it will be on the radio, but it's going to be live here. You do such an amazing job. You are way better than Steve Harvey.
What?
You are...
Say Wink Martindale if you
You're
want to win me over.
You're way better than Wink Martindale.
Oh, no, really? Thank you, Wendy.
Who's
That's so nice.
Who's the guy who did Joker's Wild?
Jack Barry.
You're way better than Jack Barry.
Oh, come on.
So
now
thank
I
you
know
for,
you're fibbing.
Thank
That's
you for
impossible.
Putting together this amazing game.
Bobby Van?
No, you're not
as good as
Bobby
Van. No. All right, so a lot more coming up. Alan Zweibel is next, former writer for Saturday Night Live and now a playwright. We'll talk to him in just a little bit. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Dime for Clint.
I'm sorry. Talk amongst yourselves.
It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We're live at the Museum of Broadcast Communications with a very, very nice group of people.
We're here, of course, to see a Saturday Night Live, The Experience.
Yeah.
Bill and I took a pre-show tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing. You guys are in for a huge treat. Definitely a huge treat.
Joining us right now by way of telephone, Alan Zweibel. Alan was one of the original Saturday Night Live writers and has a show running in Chicago right now called Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. Alan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Great to talk to you again, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
We wish you could be here to join us. I know that this experience was in New York as well. Obviously, you got a chance to see it, correct?
Yeah, I went opening night here in New York with my wife, and, you know, it was really nostalgic because, you know, that museum has got a lot of artifacts and from dating back to my era, so I recognized them, and it was fun to see again, brought back a lot of great memories. And also, I saw things, memorabilia from the years that came after me, so it was a lot of fun.
Alan, do us a favor. Go back in time. Go back to 1975. What were you doing when you first got the job as one of the original writers on SNL? What were you doing prior to that?
And what year was it? We need the whole history.
Well, 1975 is when Lorne hired me for this brand new show that was going to premiere in the fall called Saturday Night Live. Prior to me getting the job, I was doing two things. I was selling jokes that I was writing for old Jewish comedians that worked the Catskill Mountains. So that was, and they were paying me $7 a joke. That was the going rate. And to supplement this great living I was making, I worked in a delicatessen in Queens, New York. So that's exactly what I was doing when I got the job.
So think about the gamble of giving up all that great show business stuff to try out for Saturday Night Live. You really put it all on the line, didn't you?
Oh, God, yeah. My future as a delicatessen counter clerk was really, really on the line here. So I was really going up the ladder when it came to slice and lock, you know, and making a corned beef sandwich. I figured, what the hell, let's give this thing a whirl, you know?
Alan, in the weeks leading up to that first broadcast, what was your gut feeling, though? Did you think this would be anywhere near the success it ended up being? There was no way to determine that, was there?
No, there was no way to gauge that at all. What was fun about it, well, first of all, it was the first job that just about all of us had in television, okay? So, you know, and there was no way, you know, if anybody would have told you then that the show would last 43 years, you know, they're lying. You know, there's not a chance. But it was incredibly exciting. We all got along, and the only rule that Lorne had was if it made us laugh, we'll put it on television. And he was confident that there was an audience out there who wasn't being spoken to comedically at that time. And, you know, and he said, we'll find some people who like us, and hopefully they'll tell their friends, you know. So it was a blast. But there's no way there could have been any sort of forecasting that this would become the institution it became.
What a great litmus test, though. If somebody laughs, we're putting it on TV, because we all want to laugh and we all, you know, find things funny. How many writers were there when you started, Alan?
There were 10, and that included Lorne. So there was Lorne plus 9 others.
And this is separate from, I know some of the cast members also got writing credits. Was that separate from that or the same?
Well, they started getting writing credits the next year.
Oh.
Okay, so like John and Danny wrote stuff the first year, Gilda too a little bit, I think, but they didn't get any credits. No, I take that back about Gilda. It was mostly John and Danny, and I think they started getting credit the second year, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even the third. I'm not even sure, but there were 10 writers that included Lorne, and we worked with you know, the cast members, because they were such great improv players, you know, and they came out of Second City in Chicago and Toronto, and in the case of Lorraine Newman, the Groundlings in L.A., that there was a lot of collaboration done.
Was there someone in specifically that you liked writing for more than someone else?
Well,
that's a tough question.
mostly with and for Gilda, but in those early years, because I wrote jokes, you know, like I said, prior to getting the job, I gravitated also towards Weekend Update, so I guess you could say I wrote a lot for Chevy, and I ended up writing just about all, except for one, of the samurais for John Belushi. They were a lot of fun. But, you know, we all did everything. So, but those, I guess you could say the first, yeah, that those were my primary areas that I focused on.
Alan, we're going to take a break in a couple minutes and then come back and talk about your new show, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. But I need to ask you, since her name has come up, what do you think it was about her? What set Gilda Radner apart from pretty much everybody else who's ever done comedy?
Well, I think that what Gilda had was this very unique, intangible sort of quality, which was that no matter what she was doing, her personality as a human being came through. So you felt you knew her. You know, whether she was wearing a funny wig as Rosanna Dana, or dancing across the studio floor with Steve Martin, you had a sense of who Gilda was, because she showed her soul. She told you about her vulnerabilities and her fears, and there was a little girl inside of there that we all found very, very embraceable, no matter what she was doing. So I think that that's the rare quality that she had, because you get actors and actresses who are fantastic at what they do, but they hide within the character that they're portraying. Gilda had that unique quality of portraying a character, but you also got a sense of who Gilda was.
And speaking of the little girl inside, there were little girls such as myself, teenagers, watching Gilda Radner, thinking this was so cool. I was this tomboy girl, and I wanted to see the girl hang with the guys. I loved Toadie Fields, Joan Rivers, and it was nice to see a hip, cool chick like Gilda Radner hang with the guys. She was amazing.
Well, that's exactly right, because at that time, by and large, like you mentioned, Toadie Fields and some of the old, you know, Joan Rivers, you know, Carol Burnett as well, you know, they were older than us. It was our generation, the baby boomer generation, had somebody that they can relate to, who dressed the way they did, who
yep.
had the same reference points that they did, and they go, I want to be like her. She could be my friend. I want to be like her.
One of the most underrated things she ever did, I think, on the show, Ellen, is when she would do the Judy Miller show, and she would be that little girl and bouncing around her bedroom and having her own talk show, because almost everybody has had that moment in their life. It was just so refreshing to see a real performer act it out on television.
I sold toothpaste in the mirror. That's what I did for my little acting out.
Well, those were written by a writer named Marilyn Suzanne Miller.
Yeah.
And Judy Miller was her sister, and she did, she did a great job. Marilyn did, as did Gilda, play acting like that. And you're quite right. Boys did it too, whether it was a baseball player or something they fantasized about. We all had our own little shows that we put on, and, the writing and the acting in those were quite terrific.
Pearl Drops toothpaste. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. Alan, let's talk a little bit about the bridge of what Saturday Night Live brought to comedy in the old days. They always went out of their way, I felt, Saturday Night Live, especially in the early days, of paying tribute to those old performers. I remember Milton Berle hosting an episode. I remember Bob and Ray coming on and doing a special with Jane, Lorraine, and Gilda. It was a really nice bridge from the old kind of comedy to the comedy of what was then today.
Well, that's quite right. I think we, as much as we were anarchistic in a way, you know what I mean, and parodied the generation that came before us. That was our stock and trade. You know, the early the logo for the show was, it said Saturday Night Live, was spray painted on the marble wall of 30 Rock, which said it all. You know what I mean? That there was a sort of a sacrilegious kind of look at institutions and a parody of them. That being said, at the same time, we had a certain sort of reverence and gratitude for the older guys that came before us, because we wouldn't have been able to exist without them. So we did show that kind of reverence.
That's Ellen Zweibel, one of the original writers for Saturday Night Live, and a great playwright. His new show, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story, is playing at the Mercury Theater right now. We'll talk more about that and give some tickets away later on. Stick around. More of us, Bill and Wendy, in just a moment. It's WGN.
We are broadcasting live from Saturday Night Live, The Experience. We're at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It's Bill Leffert's Wendy Snyder.
Ellen Zweibel is with us. Ellen is one of the original Saturday Night Live writers back in the mid-1970s. He has a show running in Chicago right now called Bunny Bunny. Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. It's playing at the Mercury Theater here in town. Alan, every week there on Saturday Night Live, you had absolute show business royalty coming through the studio, sometimes hosting, sometimes just the musical guest. Who wowed you? Who did you just say to yourself, I can't believe I'm working with this guy or this girl?
Well, believe it or not, I mean, my favorite host was Buck Henry. He was an idol of mine because he wrote The Graduate. He created Get Smart. And so there was a fellow writer there that I looked up to, and the fact that I was able to write with him, write for him, and he became a friend, was really a thrill for me. Obviously, Steve Martin was a favorite when he used to come and host, and, Lily Tomlin. I also loved it when Fran Tarkenton hosted. I brought a football to the offices that day. I handed it to him. I went down the hall, and I asked him to throw it to me. So now I can actually say I caught a pass from Tarkenton, you know. So it was, whatever their areas of expertise were, it was our job as writers to capture them and to play to their strengths.
And before we had you on, we were talking about all that Saturday Night Live did for the musical artists of our time. Any favorites that you came across that you put into sketches and wrote for?
Well, you know, Mick Jagger, it was fun to put him into a sketch. It was fun. Paul Simon, in particular, was great fun. You know, the fact that, you know, I grew up in New York and loving Simon and Garfunkel, getting to meet him, getting to be friends with him, and getting to write for him, to put him into sketches was a great, great thrill, you know. When Joe Cocker did the show, he and John Belushi, performed together.
That is classic.
Yeah, I didn't have anything to do with that. I think it may have been just the two of them who decided this is what we're going to do. You know, there was no writing involved. It was a duet, but because John did an impeccable Joe Cocker, you know, so I remember just standing in the studio just with my mouth open going, look what I'm looking at, you know.
How thick is your autograph book, by the way, Alan?
I actually don't have one. You know, it was sort of gauche to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I did. I can give it to my kids or grandkids. But, for a host to come in and all of a sudden I'm coming around like, you know, somebody in middle school.
I know.
It would look bad.
Really look bad, you know.
That's what selfies are like now. That's what everybody does. Jagger was just spotted in Chicago, and I'm sure people were going, you know, hey, can I do a selfie, Mick?
Alan, I don't know if you wrote this, but you had Mick Jagger on The Tomorrow Show with Dan Aykroyd as Tom Snyder, and Tom Snyder showing Mick Jagger how his dance should go. Were you responsible for that?
I have nothing to do with that.
No?
My guess is that Danny wrote that himself.
Oh, so funny. Let's talk about the show, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. This is a lifetime in the making, isn't it?
Well, you know, look, about 3 years after Gilda died, my wife Robin said, you know, you should write a book about you and Gilda. And I resisted. I didn't want to, capitalize on my friendship with her. But my wife said, you know, to hell with that. You know, your best friend died, and you haven't mourned yet. So I wrote a book called Gilda Radner's Sort of Love Story, and it wasn't even intended to be published. It was for my own sort of catharsis, and the choice that I made was to go back and relive everything I can remember about the relationship. And if you look at the book, it was pure dialogue. She talks, I talk, she talks, I talk. For 14 years of this platonic love affair, where did we meet? Oh, we met behind a potted plant in Lorne Michaels' office the first day of the show. And I reconstructed everything as best I could remember through 14 years. Her last appearance on TV was on its Gary Shandling show, a show that I co-created and produced, and ending with a eulogy I gave at her memorial. And when the book was finished, I just sent it to, I figured, okay, catharsis is over, maybe there's some closure. I sent it to some people who knew me and Gilda, just to, you know, for memory's sake. I sent it to Gary Shandling, I sent it to Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner and Gene Wilder, her husband, you know, and they all encouraged me to publish it as a book. I did, and then I adapted it into a play. And it was very easy to adapt into a play because it was written in pure dialogue to begin with. You know, when I wrote it, I didn't want the formality of paragraphs or punctuation. I wanted the words to touch each other. So when I adapted it from the book into the play, it worked really, really well. So, and I'm thrilled that the Mercury Theater is staging it right now.
Well, we're pretty excited as well when we found out that we were going to be here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications for the whole Saturday Night Live, the experience. Right away, Bill's like, we should get Alan Zweibel. And I said, look, he's got a new play out, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, Sort of Love Story. So it all makes sense. We have tickets that we're actually going to give away. Bill has come up with a Saturday Night Live version of Jeopardy that we're going to play on the radio later on. And we do have a pair of tickets to see your play. Of course, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. It's playing at the Mercury Theater, written by Gilda's lifelong friend and Saturday Night Live writer, whom we're speaking to right now, Alan Zweibel. This tribute play to Gilda Radner celebrates her legacy of courage and comedy. She was really something amazing, Alan. You can get tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com. We have a phone number, 573-325-1700. We're so glad you could be with us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure talking to you. And I'm going to take that Jeopardy test later. Maybe I can win it.
You can win tickets, Alan. That'd be great. It's Alan Zweibel, everybody. Thanks, Alan. Take care of yourself. We appreciate you being here.
You guys too.
Alan Zweibel.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan. We'll take a quick break, some news, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You know, normally we would be here till Bob. You are.
We are broadcasting live. Let's hear ya. We are at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We, Bill and I, Bill Luff, Wendy Snyder, have already toured Saturday Night Live, The Experience. We have listeners with us today who are going to tour it after our show, I believe. And please, people, come on by because it's fantastic,
it's
is it
so
not?
So good. Yeah, we knew it would be good. Did you know it would be this
no.
good? It's really impressive.
Very impressive. Yeah. Special thanks to Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits. Visit their bakeries in Logan Square or Ravenswood for sweet and savory pies, biscuits, coffee, and more. Did you have the key lime pie?
I did.
Did you have the Svengoolie pie?
No, I did not have the Svengoolie pie. That's not a bad idea, Rich. Real rubber chickens are used in the making of this pie. This is Rich Poe's close friend and confidant to Svengoolie.
Hi. How are you,
Rich?
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'm sorry we had like a false alarm with you. We brought you up to sit with us, and then we said, just kidding, psych. Can we talk to you later?
Because you weren't sure about the phone interview. So.
Right.
I was like the
in case of bullpen.
In case of emergency, break glass. So
that's you.
Hi, Rich Glass here. You know.
That's you. Rich, isn't it nice to have a museum here in our city that pays tribute to all the great television and radio moments that have happened?
Really, I think this place is probably one of the best-kept secrets in Chicago, and it's great that now with this exhibit especially, people are finally realizing that it's here. There have been so many people, because, you know, we have the Svengoolie exhibit downstairs, and I'd tell them, you know, go in and see it, and they'd come back and say, well, I didn't know this place even existed. So now the word is getting out, which is tremendous. Because there's so much, not just national television stuff, but a lot of Chicago TV history here. And it's a great experience for people.
Bill, you have to see Garfield Goose. I don't remember what floor Garfield Goose is on.
Three?
All right, thank you.
Yeah, it's right near the Svengoolie exhibit.
There's a Svengoolie exhibit?
Why, funny you should ask, Billy, yes.
Oh,
actually, it's our original set and my original coffin. And,
who else can say those words with a straight face?
I've always told you the story that when I went to see my cardiologist, and it was when we had gotten the coffin that we use on the show now, and I said to him, yeah, you know, how many of your patients can tell you that they've had two coffins? And he looks at me and says, you almost had a third.
Which coffin was this? Rich brought a picture of when Bill and I were on the Svengoolie show in 1996.
Yeah.
And I have the same makeup that you have, evidently. Boy, you know, when you look back on things, you think you should have done it differently.
Max Factor hadn't invented pigment yet. It was a very,
That's actually the coffin and walls of the set that are down in the
original. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to put that online. Thank you for bringing this. It was a fun time.
Sure, yeah. And, like I was telling you earlier, when I look at it, it looks like I'm in a funhouse mirror because I look so much thinner.
I want to bridge the gap between your show and Saturday Night Live. It's not easy, but let me try. Before Saturday Night Live was on at 10:30 on Saturday nights, the show that most of us here in Chicago watched was Creature Features on Channel 9. So you were already at the competition at Screaming Eagle Theater. You were writing for them, for the original Svengoolie, as a Northwestern student. Did you also watch Creature Features, or did you feel like, no, I get enough of this at work.
I watched Creature Features.
You did?
Because they had a lot of the good movies that we didn't have at first.
Right.
And I remember watching the very first Saturday Night Live show and saying, was it Mr. Mike teaching the immigrant John Belushi how to speak English? And saying, like, wow, what is this?
Michael O'Donohue, a writer for Harvard Lampoon and the National Lampoon.
Yeah.
He was at the very beginning. And I didn't know what this phrase meant at the time, but there's a phrase called the inmates have taken over the asylum.
Right.
And I remember watching it going, I don't know what to make of this. I love it, but I don't understand it yet. And that's kind of the analogy.
And that was exactly the way I felt, too.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I was hooked from that first show.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to now have this display with so much of the history of the show here.
I can't stop watching the show.
I mean, really, I can't. I at least we can DVR.
Well, it's okay now because no, I'm not on opposite my show earlier in the night.
Rich, go back a second. You talked about it wasn't a rival; it was a friendly rivalry between your show, sure. Svengoolie, Screaming Yellow Theater, and Creature Features. So why were they getting the A-list movies, the Universal, the original Dracula, the original Frankenstein, and you were getting I Was a Teenage Werewolf and things like that?
Well, back then it wasn't me. It was Jerry G. Bishop.
Right, right.
But the reason was, quite honestly, that, you know, it was WGN, Channel 9, which was so established, and this was WFLD, Channel 32, which wasn't quite in the same position.
Financially.
So, yeah, we get... You know, it came from under the stairs and then went back down. Movies like that. But of course, they got the A-list seven. Eventually, we did get them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was during my tenure that we got them there.
What was the movie? I remember this as a kid, and I don't think you were with the show yet. I think it was still Jerry playing Svengoolie. But there were these things that looked like jellyfish that would fly through the air and attach themselves to people's heads and suck out their brains. Was that one movie or every movie?
Fiend Without a Face?
It might have been Fiend Without a Face.
Which is a movie we've been trying to get forever. We're working on it. It was this invisible menace was destroying people's brains and killing them. They found a way to make them visible. And when they were visible, they were basically brains with spinal columns.
That's it. Yeah.
They inched along in the spinal columns like caterpillars.
Yeah.
And they had little antenna. And they would attack them by leaping through the air and wrapping the spinal column around the person's throat.
Right.
Very plausible. Like,
Based on a true story.
But see, now you do fine because people can DVR all this stuff now. Before, it's like you had to watch it live or you missed it.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people who do watch it live because if you go on Twitter on Saturday nights, I'm amazed. We're trending, you know, in the top numbers.
Yeah, from my house, the boys and Jimmy Mack are watching.
God bless them, yeah. So it's nice, and it's just amazing to me to be, you know, hearing from people all over the country. It's pretty cool.
And we have discussed this with you in the past, but some of those people that you've been hearing from are very, very famous, notable people, aren't they?
Yeah, we have people who are big fans, like Mark Hamill, and Gilbert Gottfried has been a guest on the show several times.
Yeah.
David Desmalchin, who was an Ant-Man, was Kurt the Russian hacker. He's a big fan.
Do they reach out to you?
Some of them have,
Because I know Mark Hamill didn't have a T-shirt or something, or how did that happen?
You want me to tell the story?
Yeah.
Sure. I get an email, and it says, "Hi, I'm Mark Hamill, and I'm really a big fan of your show." And I'm like, okay. And I emailed him back, and I said, you know, I'm very flattered, but, you know, even me as a bottom feeder celebrity has people who pretend to be me. So I said, I wish there was a way to confirm that it was you. And he said, well, give me your phone number. I'll call you. And I'm like, yeah, that'll work. Sure. Not Mark Hamill. So I kept thinking, and I knew he had a verified Twitter handle. And I said, I tell you what, just put a message on Twitter, and I'll know it's you.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting, and 1 hour goes by, 2 hours, 3 hours, and I'm going, Mark Hamill, okay. Finally, up comes a tweet from him saying, one of the cool things I discovered this summer is the Svengoolie show on MeTV. So sent him the phone number. He called me. We talked the first time for like about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And he keeps promising that, he keeps saying it's our destiny to meet face to face, but he never quite gets to Chicago.
So
sometime down the line, though.
But it's a thrill to know that somebody you admire that much is a fan, isn't it?
Yeah, and I get emails from many quotes, little things from the show in it. And I'm like, wow, I've got Jedis. We're tracking very high with Jedis.
During the playoff run of the Blackhawks a year or so ago, I sent you a message saying, we're watching the Blackhawks game, and they're talking about you on the Blackhawks game.
That's right. Doc Emmerich?
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, and I have no idea why he always brings up my name. He was finishing up a game not too long ago, and he goes, you know, for me and for so-and-so here and Svengoolie. And I'm like,
just out of the blue.
But I guess he's a fan.
Yeah.
So you guys have contacts with him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sometime... I'd like to just say thank you.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a really nice man. That's Rich Pose. He's Svengoolie on TV. Watch him on MeTV.
He has an exhibit.
He's got an exhibit. We'll talk about that. Yeah, you do. You do. We'll talk about that next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We are live in action from Saturday Night Live, The Experience. It's going on at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. You really need to come see it.
It's so good. Rich Coase is here. He is Svengoolie. Svengoolie.com is the website. You can watch him on MeTV every Saturday night at 7 and get scared along with the rest of us.
Don't you have to say spoiler alert
spoiler
when you
alert.
Say he's Svengoolie?
Yes.
I thought that was the secret.
Rich is one of Santa's helpers.
Okay.
Rich.
By the way, Bill, you're on that naughty list. So.
Oh, I am? Good. That's where I want to be. This is a strange tie-in, but you were almost featured on an episode of Saturday Night Live, but not really. Explain.
Yeah, this is a strange story, and I only have the facts due to a former coworker of mine, a friend, Steve Gadlin. Around the time of the election, there were a couple cast members and writers who were from Chicago, Michael O'Brien and Tim Robinson. And they wanted to write a bit going on the idea that what if Svengoolie worked for Fox News as a political pundit? And it would tie in, you know, with different, you know, doing puns the same way that I do. You know, I'm tired of the extremism of the liberal bleedia type stuff. And they were going to call the character the Scaremazing Gouldini, who was a late-night horror host who was going to become this political pundit. And it made it all the way up and into dress rehearsal, but then got cut, I think, for time before it actually hit air. There's a picture on this exact Weekend Update set with, you know, the guy in the one chair, and then the other guy, he looked just like me.
And who was it who played you? Do you know?
I believe it was Tim Robinson.
Oh, it was, yeah.
And they said they had a great time. They're big fans of the show, and they watched a lot of my old bits just to get the feel of it. And it almost, so I almost became a character.
Oh, wouldn't that have been fun? And you didn't know it was coming. You might have been watching the show.
No, not at all. I think the first time I knew about it was when I saw the still picture. I think I sent it to Jasmine on the set. And I'm looking at it, it's like, that looks like me, but it's not me. Is this Photoshop or something? But,
great.
It's very flattering. I can't imagine what would have happened if the character actually was on there.
That would have been so much fun. Now, this is also very flattering. There's an award called the Rondo Award. You've won this in the past six times.
Six times.
But you're nominated again. Explain what the Rondo Award is.
The Rondo Awards are awards for horror and science fiction and, you know, various media. And they're really cool because the results are because fans vote for them. And you vote for your favorites and all this stuff. The voting is done online with cutting and pasting of the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
It's real simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been nominated again. I think it's category 21 or something as the favorite horror host. And
I was nominated for something different.
That sounded like it?
Yeah, a little bit.
More.
Less a syllable.
Really. But, yeah, I've been nominated again. And it's cool. And I always tell people, vote for who your real favorites are. You know, I'm not saying, you know, vote for me. I was almost Nixon there.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's very cool, and it's a way for fans to kind of let the industry know what kind of stuff they like. So the voting goes on now. You go to, I think it's www.rondoaward.com.
Who are you up against?
There's at least, I want to say, 12 or 15 names in there.
So these are other horror hosts, including Elvira, from across the country.
All over the place. Some of them on the list I kind of question because they don't even have shows right now.
Well, then that's not fair.
Well, since when is politics fair? But, you know, there are a lot of them. And I think since we've been successful around the country, there are a lot of local stations who have thought, hey, we could do this, and have, you know, gotten their own hosts in that. So there's a lot of them. And one's doing them on public access.
Yeah.
And there's a big history of them. They're all out there, and they're all favorites of somebody. So
why do you think people like to be scared? What is it? Because I love to be scared, and I love to scare people. What is it about that? Because on paper, you go, well, that's not good, but it
sure
is good. It's fun.
No,
why?
I think I've mentioned this before. It's a lot like riding a roller coaster. You know when you get on it that it's going to be scary, and, you know, you're going to be really frightened, but in the end, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You're not hurt. And I think a horror movie is the same thing. You're going to see things that are scary and awful, and it's going to get that adrenaline pumping, but at the end of it, you haven't been hurt, and it's
right.
Kind of a fun experience.
Yeah. Well, when you were younger, who was the go-to guy who does what you were doing? Like we said, there were horror hosts in almost every city, major city in America. Was there somebody that you said, wow, they're really doing it right?
Well, when I was very, very young, I saw Chicago's version that was Marvin, played by Terry Bennett, who was in the original Shock Theater. Shock Theater was actually, Shock was the name of the film's the Universal films in a package that they offered to stations all around the country. So there were many shock theaters all over the place. But he did the show here, and he was kind of like a beatnik ghoul, and he played music and stuff. It was very cool.
Yeah.
I barely remember because I was very small at the time and was usually not allowed to stay.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing that really got me hooked was when my mentor, Jerry G. Bishop, started doing the Sven Gulli show. Because I was, you know, just graduated from high school, and I was a fan of his to begin with. And I saw that, and I thought, this is really fun and great stuff.
Yeah.
And you wrote in? How did you start?
I was just a fan of his and sent him some jokes, because he would read people's jokes and such. And I sent him a lot of stuff that he would use, and he found out that I was a student at Northwestern at the time. And he started to ask me to write specific things, like, can you write a parody of this commercial or whatever, and write song parodies for him. And eventually I ended up working with him, and he was the one that decided I should be son of Sven Gulli, and he was also the one that decided I should just be Sven Gulli.
To drop the son up.
Yeah, he told me, you're all grown up now, just be Sven Gulli. And I don't know if that all grown up.
Right.
People don't think I'm grown up, believe me.
Yeah, you and Bill, birds of a feather,
yes,
I'll say that
definitely.
Much.
Kids forever.
Imagine if Twitter had been around back then where you could tweet him things, because that's how Mark Hamill and other people got in touch with you. Twitter's made it much easier.
You
tweeted them.
Everything has changed so much now. You know, with like the emails, Bill and I were talking earlier about the complaints I get from viewers and how it's so much easier for them to complain. Like, you keep running Godzilla movies. Those suck. And then, you know, you this whole month you run 1970s movies. Those suck.
I promised you I'd stop tweeting you.
I promise. And then when I start running the 30s and 40s ones again, they'll write, you show too much Frankenstein, Dracula, werewolf. That sucks. So you can't make everybody happy,
no.
You know?
But you still try, don't you?
You have to keep
trying. I try and fail, yes.
Yeah. Really quickly, Joe Flaherty on SCTV did kind of a version of this with Count Floyd.
Yes.
Floyd Robertson was the anchor man, but they also made him do double duty as a horror show host. What did you think of his portrayal?
I always loved it. I thought he was hilarious. You know, just the whole idea. And he really played off what was very common and sometimes still is with horror hosts, that you'd get movies that weren't horror movies.
Right.
I've had a few of those.
Right.
Or, you know, stuff that is there and he'd be, you know, talking to the guys off camera. Who booked this movie? Prickly! And he'd be so angry. And then snapping the character. Kids, wasn't that scary? And I always loved Joe Flaherty. Anyway, I was lucky. Right when I graduated from high school, I went to the Second City, and he was on stage at the time.
Oh, really?
And doing characters, and he was just fantastic.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's RondoAward.com. That is what it is, to vote for your favorite horror host and movies and other things.
And please follow the directions, because if you do not, they will not allow your vote to be counted. And you can only vote once.
What?
Yes, it
says
that.
Even in Chicago, believe it or not.
That's crazy. Rich, it's always fun to talk to you. It's always good to see you. That's Rich Coase, everybody. You know him and love him. As a friend of Sven Gulli's, confidant of Sven Gulli's, Saturday nights at 7 on MeTV. Thank you for being here.
I'm always happy to be with you guys. Nobody makes me laugh more than you.
Oh, you're so nice. Thank you, Rich.
Thanks, Rich.
A quick break, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Now's the time our sprockets been we dumb.
Sprockets, Wendy Schneider, and Bill Leff is here, too.
I was sure you would do the dance. I don't know you.
I don't.
The Wendy I know would have done the dance.
I don't remember how it was. We are broadcasting live from Saturday Night Live, The Experience. What an experience it is. We're at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and each and every one of you listening should come out and see this exhibit. It was amazing.
Yep, very, very impressive.
I'm going to go back and take more pictures. Yep.
Justin Kolevsek is here with us right now, the Vice President of Innovation and Saturday Night Live project lead here at the Museum of Broadcast. Say hello to him. He's right over there. He can see you, you know. Justin, hi.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
So as Wendy and I have both mentioned, and it bears repeating, we knew it would be good, but boy, it's
we didn't know it would be this good. I'm serious.
It's great.
So happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the response we're getting from everybody that's coming to the Museum of Broadcast Communications right now, coming to see this exhibit, seeing 500 artifacts, all real, direct from New York. People love it.
I was getting goosebumps as I walked through the exhibit. It's very exciting. Not all of us, like Bill Leff, get to go to the Bozo Show and get to go to Saturday Night Live. So this is the closest I'm ever going to get.
Right. Is there a jealousy filter on your microphone? We got to make sure that this is hooked up. Having been there to 30 Rock, you do, as you walk through, I'm sure you know this, you get the feeling you're there. It's just, it's like being in New York.
So Mark Locke, I know, who's been on your show, he spent an entire season with at 30 Rock.
Yeah.
And so literally every detail was everything from the elevator bay. I mean, if you go into that elevator bay, if you've ever gone to 30 Rock, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it looks like, including then all the way up here to Saturday with the home base.
You've had at least one cast member come through the exhibit and tell you, wow, it's like being home again. It's like being back in the studio.
Absolutely. Tim Meadows was here for our opening night, and he literally was shocked.
Yeah.
Came out and just said, I'm amazed by this. This is incredible.
Was he amazed by the ladies' man doll that's for sale?
I'm not sure. We have to get him. We have to get him one of those for sure.
With a bottle of Cavassier.
Go back to the very genesis, the very beginning of all this. Who thought it up originally? Who said, here's a TV show that really does mean a lot to our culture. We need to celebrate it.
Yeah, so the exhibit really, again, there's a few different ways that this all kind of came to be for the museum here. It really happened. Premier Exhibitions was looking for its next move, mm-hmm. and the museum was looking for a big exhibit. And so it just kind of happened. And it was a year in the making. There's a lot of off and on again with it.
Justin Kolovsek is here, Vice President of Innovation and Saturday Night Live Project Lead here at the Museum of Broadcast. You got to see it to believe it, really. Like we keep saying over and over and over again, we knew it'd be good, but we didn't know it'd be this good. I know a lot of you who are here today have not experienced it yet. It's coming up after the show. You're going to enjoy yourselves immensely. Stick around. We've got more with Justin and more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Big Shot. Maybe you're not going to hire me now, but in 30 years, I'm going to be Mr. Entertainment. And then you're going to be sorry, because I'm Gumby, damn it. Cut! Cut! Who told you to say diamond, diamond?
It's Bill Lepp, it's Wendy Snyder. We are broadcasting live, and we are rocking into the night. Saturday Night Live, the experience at the Museum of Broadcast Communications on State Street. And we're talking to Justin Kolovsek, Vice President, Innovation and SNL Project Lead of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We're talking about this experience, Saturday Night Live, the experience. This is a self-guided tour. You have no tour guides. It's audio-visual. Walk us through that. Oops. Ernie's in the bathroom. Ernie, we need some mic. There we go.
So it is a self-guided tour. People walk through. They go through Monday through Saturday. Totally self-guided. And the reason really for that is because there's so many monitors to look at. There's so much stuff that any time that we have done kind of a docent walking tour through it, you always have at least one person that wants to, oh, I want to see that clip one more time.
It happened when you were giving us a tour earlier. I was lagging behind taking pictures. And you can take pictures. That's encouraged.
This is actually one of the very unique things about this exhibit is if there isn't a stanchion around it, sit in the church lady chair, sit on the Wayne's World set. It is the 40th anniversary Wayne's World set. It's the church lady chair. It's the Jeopardy podiums. It's everything is real, including the desk that we're sitting at today.
This Weekend Update desk?
This is the Weekend Update desk that was used by Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Seth Meyer.
That's excellent. So, that's so cool.
And this is actually one of the things at the very end of the exhibit. You can actually take your photo at the desk, and then they will superimpose either Tina or Amy or Seth or Michael Che. The list goes on.
Can they superimpose Bill out of my pictures and
possible?
Put everybody else in?
You know, we can make it work. Sure.
I love that they let you sit on the stuff, because over at the Field Museum with the dinosaurs, they're very stingy.
You got in trouble.
Got in trouble a couple
of times.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed about that.
You slid down Sue's back.
Yeah, it was fun. Highly recommend that experience as well. Let's talk about the Jeopardy set. That was the set that was used not regularly, but for the 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Live, right?
Correct. So the podiums and the actual Jeopardy wall, that was all used on the 40th anniversary show with Will Ferrell.
Yeah. I didn't realize until I read his book that Norm MacDonald, who was on the show for a couple of years, was almost always the writer of those Jeopardy bits. He and Steve Higgins, who's the announcer on The Tonight Show, that they wrote those, because I thought the Celebrity Jeopardy was one of the funniest things ever on the show.
Yeah. I learn something new every day about SNL, and you just taught me something new.
How about that?
Why don't you be a docent, Bill?
Maybe I will.
We're always looking for volunteers.
All right, I'm in. Upstairs, you have a case that has a bunch of the products that Saturday Night Live has used in their commercial parodies, the actual products that were used whenever they would film them. How did all that come together?
It literally, there are things, there are artifacts that SNL has kept throughout the years, those being one of them. And so I think, you know, Mark Locke, when he created it, he went through and kind of said, here's the most iconic parodied commercials and products, and mm-hmm. let's go from there.
Before there was Saturday Night Live, The Experience, where were all these artifacts? Were they in storage? Where'd you find them?
Some were in storage. Others were literally still in the costume closet, the Belushi Killer Bee costume, literally in a paper bag on a shelf in the costume closet, and they called and they said, we found the bee costume. Or another one of the items that has a lot of Chicago focus on it, there's a pair of Gilda Radner shoes.
Oh.
And they're actually here in the control room, and it's one of the very few items that they still had from Gilda. And it came, the shoes kind of, they're actually seen here in Chicago for the first time.
Yeah.
They were not in the exhibit in New York.
Yeah.
They brought them here, and they're really something special.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Is there anything that didn't make the final cut, Justin, that maybe for space sake you just didn't have time to include a set or a costume or a prop, anything?
Every set that we wanted here is here.
Really?
The only thing, there was kind of another photo gallery, but I think having more interactivity is more about,
yeah,
you know, it's better that way.
Yeah.
Where is that giant picture wall where we walked in to see it? That's have you guys seen that yet, the picture wall? All right, and listeners at home who come in, explain how those pictures are put up there.
Sure. So when you first walk in to the experience and you're waiting to kind of go into 30 Rock, there's a legacy wall. And the legacy wall is every single cast member, whether they've been on for many years or if they were on for one show, they're on that wall. Everyone from, you know, the very first person on there is Dan Aykroyd. And the order is actually based on contracts being signed. So
Dan Aykroyd was the first one signed up.
Dan Aykroyd was the first contract signed, and Luke Null, a Chicago boy, mm-hmm. is actually the most recent contract that was signed. So that is the order. You start looking at that wall, and you're amazed. There are people on there, Sarah Silverman, Robert Downey Jr., people that are, I had no idea they were on the show.
Well, you know? Some of them were featured players. They weren't regular cast members.
Correct.
Sometimes they would try somebody out for a season or half a season, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you see the wealth of talent on that wall, and
you forget,
and we keep using this comparison. I don't think there's ever been another show on television ever that can boast that much talent coming from one program.
100% agree.
Yeah.
I mean, you look there. That's actually at times we hosted the Illinois Governor's tourism conference after party last night, and there was almost a. There were so many people that were sitting there taking photos of the legacy wall.
Yeah.
And it was like, guys, there's a whole exhibit. Keep walking through. There's so much more to see.
Yeah.
So it is something really special right in the beginning to get you excited and also to kind of test your trivia, too.
Sure.
It's at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, Saturday Night Live, The Experience. Somebody has just texted us and said, coming from Toledo this weekend to see Saturday Night Live, The Experience. Saturday, where should we go for pizza?
Justin, that's your call.
Pisano's, Lou Malnati's,
yeah.
Who knows, right?
Lou Malnati's The Experience.
The other thing, the other little plug, we do have some really great partners. We have Harry Carey's next door that is actually offering a discount for anyone that comes through The Experience to go
Look
over there and
that.
Have lunch. STK, which is actually in the same building, they're offering $25 off your bill. So it actually, the ticket pays for itself. So we cannot thank our partners there enough as well, whether that be, you know, Grant DePorter over at Harry Carey's, STK in the building. We really appreciate
How about that? Did you guys know that? You could get a little discount, and this guy from Toledo, or woman, is now going to get a discount.
Justin, we're so excited about this exhibit. It really is so much fun. You guys have done a magnificent job. That's Justin Kolovsak, Vice President of Innovation and Saturday Night Live Project Lead here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for being here.
Sure, absolutely.
Thanks so much.